All right.
I mean, I don't know what that game
is. Welcome to Rap Rant. All things Raptors, all things NBA. Hosted by myself, Philip Marion, and Blair Johnson. With special guest, Patrick Harris again. We couldn't get enough of him the first time. We needed it back.
Guys like a bad smell.
Welcome.
He's like the Raptors going back to back.
Good to have you, Patrick.
Loyal Astronauts his name. You guys can't see. It's weird doing the podcast like this. We're doing them in the bubble, obviously. So Phil's in Quebec today. I have no idea where Pat is, but.
He seems to be struggling with his audio. It's okay. Perfect. We can start without him a bit. He can come in a bit later. Really be the good guest speaker. Oh, there we go.
What's going back on? I was on mute. I'm still learning this whole interweb thing.
It's okay. All right. So last time we spoke, it was the predictions for the Brooklyn Raptors series. We all said five games, which really seems foolish at this point. A bit embarrassed that I even suggested it. I kind of have that, it's like all Raptors fans, you just have that deep down, you just think there's got to be some losing in there.
Eternal pessimism.
Yeah, they made us proud.
So, yeah, let's not be too crazy though. I mean, at the end of the day, we almost did lose game two. Milwaukee lost game one, you know, Lakers lost game one. So it's not, you know, the NBA is a crazy sport, especially with no fans. So
that was Brooklyn's shot. That was Brooklyn's shot at the one game was game two.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's look at it. I mean, first series sweep, fantastic. They executed well. First game, I think Caris LeVert looked like a deer caught in the headlights when they just cranked that D in the first quarter. I was pretty impressed. So the only one thing I'll mention too, game four set an NBA franchise NBA playoff record for bench points, scoring 100. Absolutely absurd. I'll say this. There's still a lot of worry with Siakam. He seemed to struggle with his efficiency and scoring, but I think he is looking a little winded. I think he's getting his legs, but his defensive efforts were so strong that he would have strong start to a game, point wise, shooting wise, and then would tail off. So I do actually think that it was a bit of fatigue. So
his assists were up a bit too, aren't they?
Game three and four, he really played well.
I was going to say his lack of points also correlates directly with a reduction in shots, doesn't it? Like he's moving the ball around a bit more and getting other people involved more so than normal.
He did that. That was game four. There was a lot more passing. Game three as well. He was putting up shots.
Yeah.
The problem is, guys, as we talked about this last time, is we can't have people passing the ball up. There's no one who wants to take the shot. I mean, I love Steady Freddy. He's the greatest person of all time, as far as I'm concerned. But at the same point, you know, there's going to be times where he's shut down. And if you know, we don't need everyone to be Gasol, you know, where he just immediately is wide open and looks to pass the basketball. So
that's a good reason.
But I think that's the problem is we need Siakam to have the confidence to take the ball and be efficient with it when he does, not be passive. Right.
Yeah, you've got it. I mean, we're leading into the huge, huge series coming up. But he's definitely not afraid to take the shot. He's got to make them more, especially from three. If he's really going to separate himself in that Boston series, he's going to have to hit some threes consistently, keep them honest, so he can get that post game or drive to the lane much easier. There's no point. Like Brooklyn, that series over. Great. Let's get into Boston. Everybody's been waiting for.
I want to touch on a couple things kind of segueing into that, Phil. Just a couple,
right.
You know, sort of general thoughts on some of the, you know, we talk about the first round of the playoffs, not that any round's easy, but in the NBA, the first round of the playoffs, typically pretty much a layup for the first seeds, for the top seeds. And, you know, obviously in that last game, setting an NBA record, over 100 bench points scored, which, you know, congratulations to the Raptors. That's absolutely unbelievable to do that in the playoffs. But, you know, one of the questions I wanted to pose to you guys is how much effect, you know, there's not a lot of playing time for some of those lower down guys, the Matt Thomases. You know, again, I think, you know, I'll pat myself on the back for for sort of calling out the Terrence Davis impact that was going to have on the series. And he really was a big, you know, kickstarter in game two for us. So I was really pleased to see that they, that the coaching staff put the trust in him during big minutes of basketball games. But, you know, one of the things I don't need to keep going back to Boucher, but how important do you think it is that some of these players get minutes in important times in games? And then I guess my next question, and this is how the segue works, is, you know, who do you think is going to have a role in the Boston series off the bench? Is there anything you think happened in the first round that changes any of that that strategy?
Well, I think, with, correct me if I'm wrong, but with the exception of Terrence Davis, and I think Rondé, I don't think anyone else got serious game time minutes against Brooklyn, and I suspect that the bench will get shorter. There was even a game, I think it was game three, Terrence Davis didn't play, and that was the first game all season he didn't play a minute. Yeah, I mean, I suspect with the way that Norman Powell and Ibaka are playing, that bench is going to get real short against a team like Boston, because it's just, I mean, it's going to be a totally different, I mean, I'm stating the obvious, it's going to be a totally different series.
I think it was very important for two players to get time, and I think it was important for Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas. Yeah. I don't expect them to get minutes, like good minutes in Boston, but I do suspect that if there's a time where the Raptors are really struggling to score, they're going to bring Thomas or Davis in to try and do a jumpstart, whether they want to have more of a transition type game and pushing the ball to put Davis in, or if they're really struggling from three, just get Thomas in and try and get a couple knockdown shots just to get people seeing the ball go in. I think those are the two players. I unfortunately love Boucher, but I do think that he's going to get eaten alive by Cantor or Tice too. They're both very physical. I think he'd get pushed around too much. And if you have Gasol and Ibaka are healthy, they're really going to be heavy minutes for those two. But yeah, I think those are the two.
Do you think Gasol can be effective against Cantor and Dice?
I think we'll find out quickly. He'll have a short leash if he's really not effective. I'm so curious to how this series is going to go. The first couple of games, is it going to be a grinded out half court battle from the first moment, or are we going to have some real free flowing transition basketball? If it's the half court side, Gasol is definitely going to be effective, even if he's not scoring.
Right.
That's the way I view it.
You know, beggars can't be choosers, but this is one of the sort of the times in the NBA now where you're starting to appreciate some of those taller point guards, right? When you're playing against a guy like Kemba Walker, who really is for us is a matchup nightmare, because everyone, you know, not that you can ever stop LeBron or some of those small forwards, but teams have now been built to stop them a little bit better with length and, you know, with athleticism on those positions. Not that there always wasn't that, but a guy like Siakam at 6'10", you know, or a OG who's a massive human being, you know, those things start to feel really confident in the way that you're built. And then you look at, not that Freddie's not a great defender, but we don't have a lot of length in our point guard position. And Kemba Walker, you know, I know there's other guys on the team that scare me too, but Kemba Walker is a scary, scary man.
Well, they're really going to be tested from the perimeter defense perspective. And that's why Gasol in the half court will be really important. He was really instrumental against Golden State. Like, you know, he would come out and help with guys against like Clay and Steph. And at times you did a very good job. So I would suspect that we're going to have some, we're going to need some of our bigs to help out up there.
Yeah. I think this whole series, and again, this isn't necessarily a hot take, but I think this whole series is going to be won or lost on the Kemba Freddie matchup or Kemba Kyle matchup. Our ability to sort of smother him on D and get him winded, slow him down on offense. Because if, like, with Gordon Hayward out, that's already slowing down the way Boston moves the ball on offense dramatically. You saw that even in the Philly series, it was a lot of ISO ball. And if we can slow Kemba down too, then we can really get them in the half court that you were talking about, and in a defensive position that we can dominate, make them play our game. I'm just so nervous about this series. They're such a good team. It was funny, Phil, I've been listening to, you know, a lot of the Boston podcasters, the Celtic homers, like the Bill Simmons and the rest, and they're all doing the same thing we're doing, except they're scared the other way. They're thinking about all of Toronto's strengths and how good we are. So I just think this is going to be an incredible
season. Here, when you look at these two teams, so regular season, they are pretty much identical from an offensive and defensive rating perspective. Yeah. 3-point percentage, almost identical.
Yeah.
Rebounding, almost identical. Like they're basically, they're operating the same team. Now, the bad part for Raptors fans is that Boston really did hand it to us. Now, two of the games in the regular season, Gasol and Siakam were out. So that's a big deal, obviously, if you want to look at a straight numbers.
Phil, I was at the Christmas Day game, and we were playing like our second and third stringers all game.
Yeah, Boucher like, had big minutes in that game.
Yeah, he was the leading scorer, for God's sakes. Like,
And we even beat Boston in Boston with an injured lineup. Now, that being said, what Boston did really well against Toronto is that they took away the transition game and made it more half court.
Yeah.
So that was an issue. So Toronto couldn't run, and it ran into our big fears of who's going to be the guy in Toronto to step up and hit consistent crunch time in the half court setting shots. The second thing they did is their defense was cranked up as well, which was quite strong, and they create a lot of turnovers. And Toronto, while they
if you have the numbers up, what is Boston's defensive efficiency? You know, the thing about Boston,
they were at just passes. I believe they were, well, we were number two in the NBA. I think they were top five. I believe
they were three. I think.
Oh, if they were, then they were three. They were like one. They were barely off us. So here, actually, I'll look it up.
Yeah. I'm pulling up the NBA team efficiency ratings. They're number four. So we were two. They were four. It's the top four teams. You've got Milwaukee one, Toronto two, the Lakers three, and Boston four, Clippers five. All, you know, you've got your
regular season. Their defensive rating was 106.5, and we were 104.7. Their offense was 112.8, and we are 110.8. So from a net rating perspective, they were actually a 6.3, and we were 6.1. That's regular season.
Yeah.
In the bubble, the net rating, we are actually at a 20.4 net rating, but obviously we played Brooklyn. They were at a 12.3, and they as much as, you know, Ben Simmons is out, but Philly is a much better team than Brooklyn. So they've already had a couple of tight games where they had to play really sort of desperate, intense playoff basketball, and Toronto's barely been tested.
It's been a practice. We've had four scrimmages.
Toronto might get punched in the face game one.
Well, listen, I don't think this is, you know, this. The NBA is unbelievable. That's what makes it such a great league, is you get into the second round of the playoffs and the talent now. But, you know, a couple of years ago, we knew who was going to be in the finals at the beginning of the year, right? It was Cleveland versus Golden State. Like, we just knew it, and there was very few variables. And I think that's what's most exciting for me over the last couple of years, is now you really probably have 6-7 teams that can win the championship. And I think that's really, really cool. So this year is the same as last year, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I still, Philly was the hardest team we played last year in the playoffs, unquestionably. And I think Boston, not that Milwaukee is not incredible, but I think Boston is just such a unique challenge because they play with an arrogance. They have no deservedness to their arrogance. Like,
they're very similar to Toronto.
Milwaukee's been the top seed, you know, so at least they've got that. They've got some, you know, they got some hardware up on the roof of their building. And Boston's really got nothing. This group of people have never done anything together. And
what does the loss of Gordon Hayward do to that Celtics team against a team like Toronto? Because obviously Philly wasn't a challenge in any way, shape, or form.
It's a big deal. Boston's net rating is much worse without Hayward. He is a he's the unselfish glue player for the Celtics. He doesn't need to go out and try and score 25 ever.
And he moves the ball.
Do it. He moves the ball. He can play sort of that high post, passing type player. He can play down in the post. He can play pick and roll. He can do a lot. And
his loss just they're merging for error. They can't have someone who's off because there's not him to pick them up, right? There's not one, typically you've got an off guy, you find the hot hand. Well, now you've got one less guy that you can find on the floor. So I don't know that it hurts them if everyone's playing really well. I mean, it does a little bit. But this, one thing about Boston, I know it's not all the same players, but, we saw them go to the conference finals when everyone went down and we thought they had absolutely no chance. So I don't put anything by these guys. They've got so much athleticism and they've got too many really good players. I mean, they've got three guys that are going to be on the floor at all times that are absolutely phenomenal at basketball. And that should scare you at any point, right? So, Hayward's great. I think Phil and I used to rip on Hayward quite a bit, but I do appreciate what he is good at.
Well, his season, so he was averaging 17.5 points a game on a 50-38-86 shooting split.
Yeah, pretty good.
4.1 assists, can play D. And having him there and then having Marcus Smart off the bench to be that defensive spark plug was a very good system for them. So Hayward's a big loss. So yeah, basically, here's for the Celtics. They're off on net rating when for Hayward on and off, it sank by 5.1 points without him in the playoffs and 4 points in the regular season. So they're just much less efficient without Hayward. So it's a huge loss. Whereas we're hearing, cross my fingers, Lowry is listed as day to day. I suspect he's going to be playing and will be close to 100% because he is just an absolute competitor.
He better fierce be.
Competitor that would have to be a lot to take him out. So he's going to be in.
So one of the things I've been thinking about in this series is, I actually think that the X factor for us, there's, we've talked about Siakam. Listen, we obviously need Siakam to be our best scorer, and he needs to step up. Without that, it's going to be tough for us. But I think the two X factors, I think OG and his ability to play the wing against both Tatum and Brown on D and shut those guys down on a nightly basis. We don't need him to score. And so having him use that energy. And then I think Freddie can terrorize Kemba Walker on the offensive. He's crafty and he's unconventional. And I think he can cause them a whole bunch of pain on offense.
Well, they're playing well right now. All those players you mentioned, like everybody's doing a good job right now. In particular, during the regular season, the players that really struggled against Boston were Gasol and Powell. Powell, who's going to be a very key player in this series, they were basically in the games against Boston. He and Gasol were combined 1 of 13 from three. Now, that's probably not going to happen again. That is just a weird anomaly. When you look at those games and when I read the analysis, it wasn't like they were so contested and made it tough. A lot of them were just open jumpers being missed. But those guys like Gasol, Powell, OG, they're going to have their three-point shot attempts.
For sure.
Because they're going to be all over Siakam, Van Vliet, and Lowry.
And Ibaka.
Ibaka.
Ibaka's playing the best basketballs of his career.
The thing about Ibaka is that Ibaka is always open. He just plays the way, his position, the way he plays. And again, the rest of the guys on the team, Ibaka to me is always the X factor because he's going to probably have the most wide open shots out of anyone on the team. And if he's hitting, the confidence of the rest of the group raises so substantially. I'm such a lover of Ibaka just for what he does. But he does frustrate me a lot of times because, right or wrong, he is almost always open on most of his shots. He's got that great little floater he does from the free throw line, which Phil and I.
You're saying he should be going like 10 for 12 every night?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that he's one of those guys where, I think from a basketball perspective, when you see, whether it's right or wrong, when you see open shots being missed, it's deflating. And he just happens to always be open. So it goes both ways. I think he really energizes the team when he's hot. And his three-point shooting has been phenomenal this year. And I think we're going to rely upon that because it really stretches the floor. When you've got a center hitting threes, then Freddie's all of a sudden getting more layups under the basket because they're really respecting and running out to the line on you. So I agree. I think that one of the things I'm going to be watching for, because I have, you know, I've always got to pick someone I hate on the Raptors. It just is what it is. There's got to be a place for me to scream at somebody. And it's OG at this point because it just is what it is. And you know what? And the first round is the first round. And I never put too much stock into that, but his defense was spectacular. There's no question about that. And so I respect that, but I'm going to be really excited to watch the Marcus Morris versus OG because that's they're the yin and the yangs to each other, right? They're the same
Marcus
player.
Morris is not which player are you talking about?
Smart. Yeah. Right, my bad.
I would think OG would be on Tatum or Brown though.
No, not Brown. Against each other. I'm talking about their numbers because Smart's their shutdown guy and he scores a bit, right? You know, he goes sometimes he's 6 points, sometimes he's 12 points.
He's their version of OG, it's right, because games sometimes he'll drop 25 and other games he's non-existent offensively. He's always there defensively though.
He's the guy you put up on the screen next to each other where they're comparing the numbers of like the B-level guys. And I'm just excited to watch that because I really think if he steps up and becomes a scorer, because we know he's going to play great defense, if he steps up and becomes a scorer and OG sort of fades into the background, it's going to be something you guys hear me keep talking about on the podcast if we're not succeeding, because I'm going to be frustrated about why their defensive guru is better than our defensive guru, right or wrong. That's just who I'm going to put my hate on. And if he comes through, I'm going to buy the jersey, just like for Lowry and Van Vliet.
Well, let me ask. And so where do you guys think experience comes into play? Because obviously all of our stars have been through, you know, been through the wars and none of theirs have at all.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying is with this sort of undeserved arrogance that they have. And that's what worries me. Like, see, Philly doesn't have arrogance. The only arrogance they had was Jimmy Butler.
Yeah,
Jimmy Butler has that swag to him, right? And then you take Jimmy Butler away and you've got Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. There's such fake arrogance to those people. They don't play with real confidence, and you can tell that's why they are where they are. It's the same thing as you get, you know, probably with Karl Anthony Towns and Wiggins. Like, they're just losers. They're those guys.
I wonder if it's harder for that experience to become a big X factor when there's no fans and you're not traveling and it's a different experience.
Well, it's just guys are going to be a lot. I mean, just imagine this year, like I was, Michael Grange on Sportsnet was talking about it, how it's such a shame that we finally get this series and we're not going to have games at Scotiabank and at the Garden.
Oh yeah.
And because it would just, can you imagine the intensity of both those places for this series? It would just be incredible. So I do think, you know, I would say, like Blair, you were saying you think that it favors the Raptors being in the bubble. I think it doesn't, because we would have home court advantage and Boston typically doesn't play well at Scotiabank. So I think the experience factor, I just think that it's going to be less. I think, Pat, I think the experience factor is going to be less in this instance.
Yeah, I do too.
It's just a lot less pressure than what a typical playoff series will be.
But I think, you know, again, just coming, Phil, when I was talking about the advantage of the bubble, again, I know you guys remember what I was talking about, but it wasn't that we were a good home or away team or whatever. It's just that we're not necessarily a pure shooting team. And that's what I always came back to, is I think, you know, when you're in a quiet.
If this is Boston, Toronto in the Garden and Scotiabank, I think it goes seven games and we have some games in Boston where we get slaughtered, you know, that type of thing, and vice versa. I think Boston, the same deal. So yeah, I think.
And I think that the biggest thing that the fans do from a long-term perspective, not necessarily the impact they have in the game, because they do, which is such a cool part of sports, but I just hope they don't diminish any of the memories we have of the games, because obviously the fans are, and I know they will. It's going to have the fans have such an amazing impact, you know, the noise of the crowd, the intensity, the defense chants. So I know that is the case. So I'm hoping that as the games ratchet up in intensity, that we're so zoned in on the actual game itself that it doesn't lose, you know, too much of its. The double bang the other night with Doncic, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, was still pretty special, right? Like, it didn't really like my, that moment for me was still so incredible. And I really hope that that continues through, because that would be the biggest waste for me is if you went and did something really special going back to back and you said, and you, you look back on it, like we watch game six, you know, game five in Milwaukee, like literally every single time we get together, Phil. And if it wasn't, and if it wasn't
my favorite moment,
and if it wasn't that good this time around, you know, that would be the disappointment for me, that you, you did something so neat, you worked so hard, you busted your ass, and that it just wasn't quite right. And I, and I, again, I'm, as I'm watching these games, I'm in the moment, it feels the same. And then I just don't know how it impacts the long term. You know what I mean? I don't know how you guys feel about it.
I feel that it's going to be not the same. Obviously, it's not, you can't replicate it with this way, but I do think that this series has been so anticipated that we are going to be hyper focused on the basketball. And given that we're still in summer times, it's going to be interesting to see the streets of Toronto. You know, the weather's still nice. Patios are open. I think a couple games you watch, people are going to gather around seeing screens outdoors. And I think from our perspective, it's going to be pretty close.
I'm
really looking forward to it.
I think the atmosphere will still be there to a certain extent. And just to end on, like, on this conversation, I don't think there'll be an asterisk beside this title. I think this is very competitive basketball. What I'm waiting for, like, we talk about the Raptors in Boston being defensive specialists. I'm waiting for our team to play defense in the playoffs, because the scores, like, we're like, that's the one thing I was, the only thing about the Brooklyn series. And I know it's different when you get your bench guys in and stuff, but like, we were giving up a lot of points in some of those games, as was Boston.
Well, I mean, one of the things, I agree, like, you can definitely ratchet the defense up for sure. But the two things that I'm noticing is just, A, how good, like, the shooters have gotten, right? I mean, you're watching bad teams rain threes down. And they're competitive.
There's no pressure from crowd. You're relaxed.
I agree. Dude. I think that's part of it for sure. I think that's part of it for sure. I mean, but part of it's just
Jaylen
also
Brown.
But part of it is just the NBA is, you know, it's been transitioning to three pointers, and by metric of that, by the nature of it, people are going to get better at shooting threes every year. And I know that part of it is the people not being in the crowd, but part of it is just this change of the NBA, right? Where if you can't shoot a three, you're not in the league anymore, right? And I think that's good. We're going to continue to see that. It's hard to adjust defenses, right? Like, you're stretching the floor now, and guys like Damian Lillard are hitting from 25 feet behind the 3-point line at like 40%. And again, I'm watching bad teams. I'm watching bad teams just hit threes after three. When they get hot, any basketball player in the NBA is a star. So I think that's part of it. And also, they play the game so fast. There's no one that's going 24-second shot clocks. People push the ball. They're transition threes. I think the game has never been played this fast. So I would imagine if you looked at the number of possessions too, it's got to be quite high.
Just as a, if I can just cut in for a sec, when we started this podcast, Utah was up 12 on Denver late in the third. Now Denver's up 9 with a minute left, and Jamal Murray has absolutely torched the Jazz tonight.
He's incredible.
Dropped 42.
Yeah, he's incredible.
42 already. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
But I think that's a great connection there, Pat, because, you know, that's, you never know if it's good or bad, you know, same thing in football, right? And even hockey, but football, no one came back from 20-point deficits. Now a 20-point deficit in football, it's a passing league. It's like, you could have 3 minutes left in the game and you can come back. So basketball, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but we've never also seen so many comebacks, you know, in, you know, if you get down by 20 points, it used to be you're done. Now it's like you can overcome a 20-point deficit. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I like the defense. There's no question about it. But at the same point, I definitely like the excitement of the ability to come back too.
I think that's the only thing the Raptors will have a leg up for experience-wise is that they did go through a lot of games last playoffs where they were down, and particularly the Milwaukee series.
And
there was zero panic. So that experience, I think, should really help, because there's going to be times that Boston comes out firing and they've been shooting well from three, and at times it's going to be unstoppable. And how are you going to respond? So that's one good area. I personally think my prediction for the series
is
a bit unfortunate, and the pessimistic, tortured Raptor fan is coming out in me. I don't think we're going to win.
Where did the optimism go, Philip?
And this is – I do think we're going to lose in seven. I think it's going to – we're going to lose a crushing game in game seven, and it's going to kill me. It's almost like I want it to happen.
Phil, just so we're clear, listeners, Phil is not preparing for just the loss. It's going to be a crushing defeat in seven games.
Because I think each game is going to be a heart attack. I think it's going to be very hard to watch this series. It's going to be stressful. But the reason why I think the Raptors aren't going to win is I think they're not going to be able to play their style of basketball, which is transition and fast-paced offense. And I think we're going to get stuck in a half-court grinded-out battle. And I think that their two main guys are better than our two main guys in half-court scoring. And that's – I think Tatum and Brown are going to – We're going to see the pain of not having Kawhi in this series. That's what I think. Now, the way that the Raptors can prove me wrong, which obviously I hope to be wrong. And the best part about predicting these things and being wrong is that it's a good result, right? But the Raptors can be – they can win this if they are able to get a bit of transition basketball going, don't turn the ball over, and shoot well from three. So you get those things going. The defense is going to be consistent. It's going to be there. I'm not worried about that. It's the half-court scoring.
Let me take you guys through this, because I think this is really interesting. And I do want to come back to something we talked about a little bit earlier, because I think it's important as you're going through that, Phil, and talking about – and I'm getting pretty – not trying to be abrasive with my co-hosts here, but I am getting a little bit sick of the analogy that OG doesn't need to score. Because you're right, he doesn't need to score against Brooklyn, but he definitely needs to score against Boston, right? I mean, are we all going to be okay – if we lose to Boston by 6 points, multiple times, and Siakam has 4 points, and OG has 4 points, I'm not going to be okay with that. Anyways, I just want to pull this up. It's really interesting. I don't know if I'm throwing fire down here, but this is pretty insane. So RaptorsHQ.com. You guys ever go there?
No.
So it's something I go to. It's obviously a Raptors blog. I don't know if they have a podcast. Probably not as good as ours, but that's okay. So they rank the top players on both teams. And so they have the number one player in the series being Jason Tatum. I'm just going to throw this out there and then we can talk a little bit about it. Number two being Pascal Siakam, three Kyle Lowry, four Jaylen Brown, five Fred VanVleet, and six Kemba Walker, seven Norman Powell, eight Marcus Smart, and nine OG Anunoby. And then they've got Serge and a couple of other guys. But anyways, very, really interesting. And what they say is, again, I think we're all agreeing, is they've got the two top difference makers, they call them, is Tatum and Siakam. And they just said Siakam's the more polished offensive player. And then they move on down to some of the other guys. And I think one of the things that I want to touch on here is I think my big thing to look at here, and again, Phil, I'm going to agree with you, not necessarily who's going to win, because I'm going to try to be the optimist here, but Kemba Walker is like a star basketball player. Fred VanVleet's playing like a star right now. Is Fred VanVleet really a star? And if
this is going to be a big series to say so. That's right.
Big time. That's so exciting to me because I love Freddie, and if he fails, I'll still love him so much. But if he succeeds, there's no one in the world that is going to be more amped up than me.
Think about it from this perspective, though. Like, we watched Fred VanVleet come to life against the league's best Milwaukee Bucks team. Then we watched him play out of his mind against the dynasty Golden State Warriors. And he's been steady Freddy all year. Like, I have no reason to think he won't be playing at the same level he's been playing at for the last year.
He really struggled.
And I think he'll be the difference maker.
He really struggled against Boston in the regular season. So their length really disrupted him. Now,
Kemba didn't play in those games. And Kemba's also not a big guard.
No, but also in Fred's defense, he struggled with injuries at times during the year, so he's playing lights out right now. So to try and use the comparison of Fred VanVleet in the regular season is actually wrong for me to do. I just have to bring it up. I do think he's going to be a big factor in this series, and he's going.
And you got to know. We talked about this before, Phil, like as it relates to Lowry and VanVleet, they're both undersized, but those guys have balls of steel and they don't give a shit. Like
I'm not worried about the height thing. They've proven that they're one of the best, you know, backcourt duos in the NBA. So
Phil, you got Celtics in seven. I'm going to go Raps in six. And I'm going to say that every game that we win is going to be close, and we're going to win four very close games that are going to give all of us heart attacks, and we're going to get the absolute shit kicked out of us in two games.
That sounds very realistic.
Raps in six.
Okay. So I'm going Raps in six. I don't think the same thing. I think we're going to see. I know Boston's a good basketball team. I think the Raptors are a great basketball team. I really do. I think their team defense. I think the ball, the way they move the basketball. I mean, I'm going to hang my hat on the fact that we're going to have some outstanding performances. The guys are going to rise to the occasion. I know Boston's got great defense. I think they're going to be lower scoring games for sure, but I think we're going to be in control of most. I think we're going to be in control of most of the series. I really, really do. I think you're going to see guys like Gasol and Ibaka and Siakam with their size. Really put, you know, over the series, grind these guys down. I really think that's going to be the case. And I think that I'm hanging my hat on Freddie being Freddie, which is the guy right now is behind the back, step back threes. He plays like Steph Curry right now. And I think the evolution of his game is one of the most exciting things I've watched in basketball. You know, I always respected DeMar DeRozan. I thought that guy improved his game significantly every single year. And I was always proud of him for that. He was just a roadblock for us, but Freddie's the same type of player. You know, he was averaging in the first three games like 30 points, 11 assists, like the full game, the full like scoring, assists, create your own shot, be able to pass. He's so fun to watch when he's on, and I'm gonna, you know, and he's one of those guys. He doesn't really seem to have too many off nights. I think he's gonna be the horse that they ride, and everyone's gonna get behind him. The guy's a winner. He's a leader as far as the Black Lives Matter movement. The guy's just such a great guy. He's such a good ombudsman for that team and such a good spokesman for that team. And I think I've got a lot of respect for the Raptors. And so I'm going to say,
have you ever heard this level of optimism from Blair ever? I've never. It's kind of alarming.
It's COVID, man. It's a different time. It's everyone.
Guys, I don't like losers, as you know. The Raptors aren't losers.
The Raptors.
I love winners. I don't like losers. That's why I don't like the Leafs.
But I hope you guys are right, and I'm the wrong piece of shit Raptors pessimist.
Yeah, I swear. Now I've got to click off the thing that says this episode's explicit.
I can't believe Blair and I agree that the Raps are going to win in six and that Freddie's going to be the X Factor. I think this is a cause for celebration.
Yeah. Well, so have you ever been to 538.com? So yeah. Huge stat site. They do a lot of probability statistical analysis. So they came out just yesterday based on how the teams have been playing, and they're basing this on the individual players, their efficiency ratios, combining them and seeing which teams are sort of their percent chances of making the conference finals, making the finals, and who will win. And just the way Boston's playing coming into this, they've got them actually as the highest chance of winning the NBA finals over the Clippers and Lakers. The Raptors. So the Celtics are a 21% chance to win, Clippers 20, Lakers 19, Rockets 14.
Oh, come on. Throw it in the garbage.
Rockets are an absolute disgrace. We can get to that later. And the Raptors at 10%.
Where's Milwaukee? Where's Milwaukee there?
Milwaukee's 9. What? Deservedly so. They're playing like garbage against Orlando.
Phil,
if you're up 3-1. They stink.
Phil, have you ever been to Las Vegas? Las Vegas looks at the Raptors series And they have favored your Toronto Raptors over the Boston Celtics, -145 versus Boston's +125.
Well, you know,
The betting money, that means the betting money is going on Toronto, which is a great thing.
I believe in money over all else, if you know me, Pat. So I think that's cool. And so does Phil, I think.
Fine. If I'm wrong, we can stop the show and just cut me out of it because I was never a true believer. I'm okay with it.
Phil, I think what you're trying to do is a little reverse psychology on yourself. You don't want to be as crushed as you think you would be if we lost, and so you're trying to mentally prepare for it.
I will die if we lose to Boston because it will kill. I cannot take a loss to that city again, and it boils over from the stupid Leafs and their inability to ever beat that damn team. And that city, and I won't be able to take it from the fans.
Guys, no, I can't stand Boston. I mean, how many times can you rebuild your basketball team and it still be in first place? Like, I don't understand how you can rejig it every year and the team is still amazing. Why can't we have that? And we always have to tear it down and build it up and then it never really gets built. I mean, Toronto's obviously been good for quite a while, but I just can't stand that city between the Patriots, the Red Sox. It looks like the Bruins will probably win the Stanley Cup this year. And then you've got Boston good again. I loved when Boston was bad. There was nothing better than it was a shoo-in to beat the Celtics.
Hold on. The Boston Red Sox stink right now, at least. At least the Red Sox suck.
Yeah, but the Red Sox 2 years ago.
They'll be the worst team in the AL East, and then they'll win the World Series next year.
And now my night's ruined. The Jays were up 4-0 tonight. Now they're down 9-6.
Phil just flipped his bet over on the video. We could see it. Blair, I couldn't agree with you more. There's no fan base that I would like to beat more than the Boston fan base. And I think we will. I think we're better than them, just straight up.
Okay, so we got the prediction. Let's talk some of the other series.
Luca.
Yeah, let's do some closeouts here. I think we should you want to do Luca now? I guess
people I gotta say two things that are very unacceptable about two players in this bubble. Now he kind of redeemed himself the last game because he actually shot pretty well, and that's Danny Green, but he's just unacceptable, and for a couple of reasons. I don't think I've ever seen a person play so poorly against their former team. It's almost like I think he's in debt with bookies and he's betting on the other team because it's just alarming how bad he's been. And then hear his excuse be, "Hey guys, I got a headache. I've been dealing with a headache, man. As soon as it's gone, I'll be back." And it's like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. Headache? If you had one for 720 days, take a couple Advil. What's wrong with you? I don't know. I found that unacceptable.
That's so ignorant for people, sufferers of migraines, but that's fine, Phil. I've always known you as an ignorant.
Headache. He didn't say migraine. When you have migraines, you specify migraine. You don't. You make sure people know it's a migraine. He said headaches.
We're taking callers, folks.
Like he's calling in sick for a math test in grade 12 or something. What's wrong with him?
And who's
number two? Second? Number two. Is a good old playoff P.
Oh man, who
is an absolute disgrace. And I'll
so
say
glad this, you brought this up, Phil.
I am
this is
so
the
happy.
Comment ever.
There was talk about Pascal Siakam being traded last year to keep Kawhi for Paul George, and thank God that didn't happen. You know, this guy has the audacity to sit there today, or maybe it was yesterday in his press conference. And say, the Dallas D is nothing special to it. It's not good. I'm just not making shots. Yeah, you're not making shots. Paul George is the first player to shoot under 25% in three straight playoff games since Bob Cousy in 1960. Minimum of 10 field goal attempts. Garbage. Joe?
What are they calling him now? What are they calling him now? Pandemic P? Isn't that what Charles Barkley calls him?
He is Pandemic P. It's disgusting.
And Phil, I love that you've got more than two. I know you got, unless you want to save them for next episode. But one of the things
we'll forget the other ones now. I can't. I've got to think about them.
One of the Paul George things, too. You're saying that Dallas's D is not good, but they're scoring 140 points on you. So maybe you should play some D.
Well, what, you're bad. And you're still not making the shots. You're in the bubble. It's like a practice shot. Get over.
No, you're not playing. Why don't you go play D? Why don't you go
probably play a record number of game-winning shots over Paul George? He's got to be the most ever. Have you ever seen the clips of how many people have hit game-winning shots on him? It's embarrassing.
No.
How do you think? Now, I've always thought Kawhi, listen, regardless of what happened, which I think he loved his year here in Toronto. I think he wanted to go home, and he finally had the chance, and he went home and all the things. But we all know he made, like, the Clippers basically trade their entire franchise to get Paul George. I wonder what Kawhi, like, they're sitting next to each other in the locker room after he shoots 10%. Like, what's he saying to him?
He's definitely giving him some side eye, being like, is this a joke? There's no way he's not pissed off.
Well, and I'll tell you guys, I'm not saying that they're not going to, you know, be successful, but they're not fun to watch. There's no ball movement. It's like Lou Williams one-on-one, Kawhi Leonard one-on-one.
They had under
game five. Game five has started, by the way.
They had under 20 assists in game three and four, I believe, which is a horrid sign. Like, and those are high scoring games. So what does that say? ISO ball.
They're not fun to watch at all. You can just tell. I mean, again, it's the first year they've been together.
Well, it will lead into my next. I remember my next unacceptable thing is actually the Houston Rocket team.
Sorry, Phil. Before we go to Houston, just one. I would let your rage go on. I just want to close out with one thing on the Clippers, which is just that an interesting stat I heard today. Without Pat Beverly, they're a 500 team, and he's not coming back anytime soon. And so I think it's going to be real tough for the Clippers to get to where they need to go with Beverly on the bench.
So let me just – that's a great point, Pat. Let me just say something here. So I hope people are listening. We're 46 minutes in. When I just saw Phil's eyes when he remembered what his third unacceptable point was, he was so enraged to say the Houston Rockets – entire team.
have you ever witnessed such horrific basketball in your life? I've never actually watched five guys stand above the three-point line and just take turns playing iso ball and hocking up threes, and you're getting one-on-one cuts to the basket. It's awful. It's actually awful. I can't stand it. It's the worst basketball I've ever watched in my life. I hate it. I hope that they get knocked out. I really, really don't want to see them again.
It's going to be different when Russ gets back. It's going to be a lot.
Not?
They're bad.
They're a different team. They're a different team with Westbrook. And when he gets back, I think if he can come back before the series is over and help them get past OKC, I actually think the series against LA will be a very entertaining one.
Well, let me tell you this. I wouldn't want to play.
Well, I won't be watching because I've already decided I'll never watch again. So
Harden's a Raptor killer, but I do agree. I think Phillips, they had their chance to win. And this is the fine line, right? And this is where, you know, you have to have a little bit of fairness towards teams. You have to, because the Raptors were four bounces away last year from potentially losing in the second round, and we called them a bunch of bums, and they're NBA champions. And so Houston's been that close before. Buzzer beaters to be, you know, Steph Curry or whoever it was on Golden State. You know, there's always that super fine line. Philly could have easily won the championship last year. We're not calling them losers anymore. We're calling them the same thing as us because they were one piece away and they brought Jimmy Butler and they win the championship. So it is a razor thin margin between being like you're great or you're a bum, right? So I do caution on that, but I think the one thing with Houston, I think they're regressing.
The whole point is that when that series that they almost won, they actually played Clint Capella in the post. They would set, like, you know, high screens screens. It was fun to watch them play basketball. Not anymore.
That's what I'm saying. I agree. They had their shot. They brought in another of the most selfish players in the history of basketball, and Russell Westbrook. And then I disagree. I think that they're ugly. They're an ugly basketball team to watch, and they're just as ugly with Russ in there without Russ.
I refuse to watch them play anymore. I hope they're out. I'd actually debate not watching the NBA finals if it was Houston Toronto. That's how much I hate their game. So move on from that. We got the Luka Utah Denver series. Didn't care. Oh yeah, let's talk Luka here. So I actually was having a debate with someone the other day, and they actually ended up agreeing with me. But this moment now, just watching him play, I would take him in a heartbeat over Giannis. And quite frankly, most other people in the NBA, he is a generational talent.
It's absurd. And
it's unbelievable.
He's the most complete basketball player I've ever watched play basketball.
It's absolutely incredible. And, you know, there might be some knock on him defensively at this moment, but I still see him playing pretty hard out there on the defensive end. It might not be spectacular right now, but he more than makes up for it being one of the most prolific offensive players I've ever seen.
And on the offensive side of the basketball, he's just LeBron James with a better jump shot. I mean, he doesn't have the athleticism, but he doesn't play with a lack of athleticism. He actually made a move the other night. I wish this wasn't just a podcast where I could actually pull it up, but he used one of LeBron's patented moves, which was it was a high screen and roll that he just sort of blew by, and then did his spin move in the lane, and he spins past you into that layup, and LeBron does that all the time. And he did it, and it looked so similar to LeBron. And then I looked at him, and, you know, not that LeBron's not a great passer. So, I'm not going to say he's better at anything LeBron other than shooting, but he really plays the game like LeBron James does.
What year is he in the NBA? And look at what he's putting up. Year three, and he's getting 40-point triple-doubles in his third game is in the playoffs. It's absurd.
40-point triple-double with a buzzer beater. Like, unbelievable.
He's incredible.
I always find it weird how greatness finds great moments. It's a weird thing, right? And like Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, do you remember the putt he hit in the U.S. Amateur to keep the amateur going? It's like, why does that happen to Tiger? He hit like a 40-foot – he was down three holes or four holes with 4 holes to go, and he came back. He hit a 40-foot putt to keep the match alive. He's the only – he won every U.S. Amateur he's ever in. He makes a 10-foot putt on 18 to keep, you know, the U.S. Open going against Rocco Media. Like, I don't know what it is about great players where just like for some reason these things just happen to them, right? Like, there's I'll think of more as we're going along, but there's things that, like that only happens, and it's such a fleeting thing. It's not because they're great. It's these weird moments of greatness. Like, anyway, so long story short is like that shot that he hit there is his coming out party really for the playoffs. Like, it was just fate. It's so strange how that worked, but it was like, how else is this game going to end?
And how did Kawhi not fight through that switch or that pick?
Oh, he's getting really criticized on that.
Like, how did Kawhi let, who was it? Was it
Jackson.
Reggie Jackson that ended up covering him? Like, wow. Unbelievable.
You know, that was he's getting really criticized. And also just, I mean, the fact that this series is 2-2, I mean, the Clippers are so much more of a complete team than Dallas. And obviously what Dallas has right now, it reminds me of, I mean, this is no comparison because Vince Carter never panned out to be what Luka Doncic is right now. But when I used to watch the Raptors in like 2000 and when he was coming up, I believed that if the game was close, that we could win against any team because we had Vince Carter, right? Like, and so when you look at those players now in this play, like, you can see that they think, hey, if we're in this game, we've got Luka. They believe they have the best player on the court, and they're stepping up and hitting great shots as well. You look at the guys you didn't expect, like Trey Burke coming up and playing really, really important minutes in important games. And like they did this without Porzingis. They believe they can win with him, and he's the best. So that's what rubs off. And great players also demand the ball at the greatest times.
I don't know who's going to win the series. I would probably still bet on the Clippers, just given their depth and experience. But like, it's not going to surprise me if Dallas pulls it out in 6 or 7. And it's also not going to surprise me if they get to the conference finals if they get past the Clippers. Like, but again, I do think the Clippers are going to come back and win.
I think they ultimately will, just because Dallas just really isn't there yet. I mean, some of the games you're going to have, like I said, I mentioned Trey Burke. You're going to have Trey Burke maybe going 1-for-10 in a game. You know,
let's be fair. I mean, I know, you know, a win's a win's a win. But in game one with Porzingis going out, they're winning that game and they're controlling that game at that point.
They were controlling that game.
So I don't know. I just haven't been impressed at all with the Clippers. I'm really excited about tonight's game. It's the most fun series to watch by a mile.
I'll give you this too. You were so right about the Portland LA series. It was like, hey, let's recognize here that Portland struggled to beat Brooklyn to even get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
What business do they have beating the Lakers? And they've just turned it on. And
it was fun. Everyone had fun on the first game, and they watched it, and we all cheered, and then we had a day of dramatic overreactions, and then the world came back down to earth. Everything came back down to earth, and the Lakers are just crushing them.
And Lillard's not even in for the next game.
It was over after game two.
But that's where you watch and you appreciate. I mean, Raptors in years past, right? In our original, the Brooklyn, you know, V1 series and some of those old series. When we got in the half court, I never believed we would score the basketball. It was always a struggle. We would stay in the games, but it was hard to watch. And that's now it's strange being so morphed into this team, because when I watch other teams, I go, "What is this? Isn't basketball?" And that's what Portland looks like. Portland has no idea what they're doing. They come down the floor, and it's like CJ McCollum or our buddy Lillard there, you know, either pulling up from three or it's nothing. And when you watch the Raptors, there's always a calm about me. When we lose, it's because we don't hit shots. It's not because the team shuts us down. And that's what I love about watching them, is I'm okay losing like that, because at least you have, you're not blaming the coach, you're not blaming this. You know, we know what we have as far as our shooters are concerned, and I'm okay with that. Again, these guys are winners. I'm happy to watch one championship for the rest of my life, although I'm sure I'll be angry in a couple of years. But anyways. But I think that's the cool thing about watching some of these other teams, is then you appreciate even more so how great of a basketball team the Raptors are. And again, it's just a matter of if we get the shot.
All jokes aside, if Boston does beat us, I'm so proud of the Raptors and their title defense run.
Great title.
If it went down that way.
Yeah.
It's just I'm really not going to be that upset. I mean, I'm just going to be upset that we lost to Boston of all teams. But –
as we're on the other teams, sort of, I was really, really, really disappointed in Indiana. I thought Indiana was
I agree.
Right? And that was, and I like Indiana. And so that kind of upset me, because I don't like Miami. I don't like Jimmy Butler. And I was hoping they were going to, and so one of the things that coming out of that, not that we're going to talk too much about it, is I'm scared of Miami, and maybe that's a good thing. You know, maybe I think Miami's really got a real shot at knocking off Milwaukee. I'd rather play Miami than Milwaukee. I don't care what you say. Milwaukee's record this year was incredible. They're still the Bucks, and
we still have Giannis. I don't care what anyone says. I mean, I'd rather not face him.
Yeah, no, he's, you know.
I think my hot take on our last podcast was that Miami will upset Milwaukee in the second round. I stand by that. I think they will. Yeah.
Milwaukee is playing like hot garbage. Even with their wins, like I watched game four. Yeah. And they gave up leads to a really bad Orlando team. They're not good. And they're missing two of their better players. The fact that there's any type of struggle is not acceptable for Bucks fans. I'd be upset if I was in their shoes. Miami is going to be a very tough out, and they're playing really well. The one thing that just bugs me about Miami is just people stop giving them so much respect. They've done nothing, and it bugs me that these guys like Duncan Robinson. I'm actually a big fan of Duncan Robinson's and Tyler Hero. Like, I think it's awesome what they've done, but stop giving these guys like, oh, they have a shot at the finals type respect. They haven't done anything yet. This is their first playoffs, and it's lucky that it's not in arenas, because a player like Duncan Robinson, who self-admittedly said, hey, I'm used to playing in arenas with no fans, they're quite comfortable. So they're a threat, but come on.
Not that I don't respect Jimmy Butler, but he's the type of guy who is also can be a very cold shooter. So I like playing against guys like that. I think.
Yeah, you can go. Well, I'm just like we're a better team than Miami. We hands down are. And so if we did actually get through and face them in the conference finals, I would feel pretty good about our chances.
So would I.
Let's just finish. We're an hour in here. Let's just finish this off. I will say, let's just go through quickly and and just make predictions. I know some of the series aren't over, but maybe we make some predictions on who. But what's the second round of the playoffs is where things get real fun, because now we're talking about Milwaukee, Miami. What an amazing series. We're talking about Boston, Toronto. Amazing. Talking about the Lakers. Who are the Lakers playing in the next round? Presumably
Lakers will be playing the winner of Houston, OKC.
Okay. So that's the shittiest one. And then you've got either Denver or Utah playing against the Clippers.
Clippers or Dallas.
Oh man, those are going to be like that. Now we start, every game is fun. And I think that, you know, again, you never like to see 4-0 sweeps. I'm looking forward to seeing a bunch of 6 and 7 game series, hopefully in the second round. That's totally my hope, because I'd love that.
I think that's definitely going to happen. I mean, the only one I think that could be really a sweep would be the Lakers. I just think unless Westbrook comes back pretty well and Houston gets through against OKC. But I think the Lakers would powerhouse, like they would steamroll the OKC. That's just the way just matchup wise. But here's my take on the East. I think whoever's the winner of the Boston-Toronto series is going to the finals.
I agree with that.
I think if Boston were to beat us, I think they'd beat Milwaukee or the Heat. They're just playing really, really good basketball right now. I think they go to the. So I think our series is the one that determines the Eastern Conference champion. And in the West, ultimately, I'm still going to say I think it's going to be Clippers-Lakers matchup in the conference finals. But the way that
I'm feeling less good with the Clippers.
I don't know. I think if the Clippers manage to get through Luka, I think they take down Utah or Denver pretty easily. I think they would
They're dominating the first quarter tonight. Not that that's much evidence, but they came to play today. That's for sure.
They're at 15 right now. So Kawhi's got. Kawhi's got 13, and there's 4 minutes left in the first quarter. So.
Well, there you go. He's stepping up, saying, you know what, Paul, if you're not going to do it, look who's got to step up.
Okay, guys. Well, that was a great pod. That was it's funny how, you know, it didn't seem like it was long ago that we did our last one, but that's how fast we won the first round of the playoffs. So, well, definitely, when are we going to do our next one? What's the game plan?
We're going to be updating these, but at the worst case, it's going to be after game two of Boston, but I'd like to try and get, you know, after every game. So we'll definitely be more active.
Yeah, now that we're back in the real parts of the series, I think we should be trying to do them. Even if they're short, there's recaps at the end of the night. It'd be pretty cool.
Yep.
I'm gonna get this one up right now, so it'll be up in about 10 or 15 minutes and take it from there.
Awesome. Go Raps.
Awesome, guys.
Go Raptors.
Woo! See you guys.